Good morning, good morning, and good morning, and welcome to yet another episode of Popping Off with Feel the Podcast. Happy Tuesday, co-host. Hope you guys had a great weekend, got an opportunity to relax, relate, release, all in preparation for another work week. I mean, it does seem like those 48 hours that we know as Saturday and Sunday, the weekend, get shorter and shorter week over week. I feel like 48 becomes 24, becomes 12, becomes 6. And it's like, man, where did the weekend go? You know, we live for the weekend. And I think especially now in this environment where we are in our homes, for me, at least the better half of being in this whole new COVID-19 pandemic-y environment, I spent the majority of my time at home. And then every 14 days or so, I would go to the grocery store, and that would be like my escape. And I think I would spend hours in the grocery store because I hadn't gone anywhere else and hadn't done anything. I had no doctor's appointments. I wasn't seeing friends. I wasn't traveling. I wasn't going to the office. I wasn't going out to eat. Even when these things began to open up, I wasn't going to the barbershop. I wasn't going to the nail salon to get my pedicure or my manicure. I wasn't doing anything. And so that getting out of the house for an hour and a half to walk down every fucking aisle at Kroger or Publix or Whole Foods or Walmart or wherever I ended was like a sweet relief. But things are different now, and the weekend comes and it goes, and I'm really, really sad. Saturday's amazing. Sunday about 4 o'clock, I start to be like, oh, is it that time again already? But you know what? That doesn't matter. We've gotten Monday out of the way, and now we are at our favorite day of the week, which is Tuesday, an opportunity for us to reunite, for us to laugh, for us to cry, and for us to talk some major shit. And I'm really excited about today's episode because I get an opportunity to have on as a guest one of my closest friends in the personage of John Sanders. And we are going to talk about the one that got away. It's interesting because we were having a conversation just randomly over text. John sent me a text, and he was saying, you know, I came across an old journal post from some years ago where I had literally written down everything that I wanted in a partner. And through reflection, I've realized that I encountered someone since that post or since that journal entry that embodied about 90% of what I wanted in a partner, and I totally missed it. And it's interesting because I talk about being in this COVID environment, being in a quarantine, social distancing, shelter in place type of environment that has caused many of us to spend some time by ourselves, alone with ourselves and our thoughts. And there's been a bit of a reckoning going on because we've had to reconcile who we are versus who we want it to be, what we want versus what we have. And it's been difficult on a lot of levels, I think, for a lot of people when you are forced to just be with yourself and be with your thoughts. Obviously, I think that some people have experienced, myself included, some form of low-grade depression, being so isolated. But when you really have to think, to heal, to reconcile, to forgive in this space because it's just you, it can be challenging. And I am really, really excited that he's the person who was like, let's do this. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the one who got away. Because I think that in each and every group of friends, at some point, the conversation about relationship, about finding a suitable partner, about love had, love lost, love wanting to get, you know, every aspect of being in a relationship and wanting to be in a relationship and having been in bad relationships comes up. And it is the preeminent conversation amongst friends. You know, whether we are lamenting about who we're dealing with, or we are complaining about who we've dealt with, or just trying to get some helpful advice about how we're looking at things. And we're oftentimes forced to look at things differently. Our friends challenge us in good ways to think about things on a different level. You know, whether we are too caught up in superficiality, whether we're too caught up in what other people think about our partner, whether we're caught up in the idea or the fantasy of what a person should be and not the actuality of who they are, it can be difficult. But I think it's a conversation worth having because, like John, like me, and like many, many others, it's not a new concept. It's not something, like I said, everybody's having these conversations in their friend groups. So obviously we're all dealing with the same thing or having to reconcile our feelings about this thing called relationship and partnership, and especially in the community of being a Black gay man who has some upward mobility, who is hitting all the marks in other areas of their life except for the area of romance. And that tends to be our story. We're educated, we are well traveled, well read, which I guess folds into education. You know, we have our careers kind of where we want them. Everything might not be perfect, but we've achieved a certain level of success in our careers. We're driving the car that we want to drive, or at least driving a nice car. We're living in the home that we want to live in, whether we are townhome owners or owners of single family homes or condominiums or whatever it is, we're doing well. We're getting the grade in so many other areas of our life, except for the area of romance. It's always an issue. And I think that it's good that he wanted to talk about this and share his thoughts. And I'm really excited to hear them. And I'm really excited to just banter back and forth with one of my closest friends on my podcast. So stay tuned after this quick break. We will be back. So what's going on, good people? We are back, and as I promised, we are joined by my really good friend, John Sanders. Hey, John, welcome to Popping Off with Phil.
Hey, Phil.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. This is cool.
This is really cool. This is dope, not only because we're doing it, but because you kind of like, let's do it, Phil. I want to do it. Like, I've talked about having people on the show. We've talked at length about doing something like this before, and we never just got to it. But for whatever reason, this topic seemed to compel you. So I'm excited about that.
Well, I'm a listener, so this is fun. Like, we talked earlier, like, I'm not much of a talker, but, you know, we'll see. We'll make it happen. We'll run through it.
It'll be easy. It's gonna test me. It's gonna see how good I am. Like, if all these interviews with Oprah and Gail have paid off, like if I really learned anything, or if I've just been like wasting my time. So I've already kind of given the audience or our co-host, because I don't have an audience. Everybody's an active participant here at Popping Off with Phil, but I've already kind of given them a little introduction about why we kind of wanted to. While we were having this moment, and it kind of spiraled from you just digging up an old journal post.
I was journaling back in I probably started journaling in 2012 or 13. Okay. And I go back every once in a while and I review. And part of that, like journaling, is talking about what you want in the future. And so I started journaling about like the type of mate I wanted to attract. And so time had passed and I don't know that I went back to the journal just last week. And what I realized is that throughout all the people that I had dated, I had actually met the person that I had talked about or that I wanted to meet or date back in 2012, 2013. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. But what I realized is that my desires and intent just hadn't been aligned, right? Like, I come across this person, this really fantastic person, and it still wasn't enough. And so I think after that realization of reading my journal entry in terms of like figuring out that I had met my perfect mate according to who I was in 2012 wasn't so perfect. And I, you know, I had to take some time and really ask myself the question about, well, what is it that I really want? If this list, all of these attributes didn't make the cut in terms of what I really wanted, what do I really want? And so, yeah, I am trying to figure that part out now, but it is, I think it is it's a bit of a difficult question because it brings up so much. And it requires that you dig deeper, a lot deeper than I have in the past. So, yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you said deep dive. So let's start there. So you read the list, obviously, as your 2020 self. How much of that matters today?
None of it. None of it. And that's
nothing on your list.
The thing is that what I realize is that it doesn't matter because I've already met that person. I've already met that person and it wasn't enough. And so I think that's where I'm at now. I'm like, damn, like, you know, I had this list and this was a good list. And I thought it was that if this person that I meet in the future meets all of these requirements, if they meet steps 1 through 20, then this is it. This is it. This is the person. And reality checked me in that it wasn't. It wasn't. Wow. I met somebody who met 99.9% of the things on my list and it still wasn't enough. I think it begs another question that like what, you know, that what I thought I wanted is not what I wanted, you know. What I wanted was something else. And I think that that's the reality of where a lot of guys are. Like a lot of people say that they want one thing, but they haven't really done and this is the hard part, right? Like we haven't done the work to really figure out what it is we want in a relationship. Or is it a relationship at all? Is it a relationship at all that we want? So, yeah.
You are a brave soul. I do not journal. And the interesting thing is, because we're talking about journaling, it forced me to go back and pull out some of the journals that I have. Because people have gifted me journals and I've had journals and I've written things down before, but it's always the same thing. There is a permanence of writing things down that has always been very difficult for me. And when I went back and I opened up this journal and I read the first thing, it was like, I don't like writing in journals and I don't like writing in pen. It's so permanent. I hate it. And I don't even remember because I didn't date it, that at least that first entry. I don't even remember when I wrote it, but it definitely was like in the very early 2000s. Well, it probably like post, I would say post college graduation, but still like 2008, something like that. Maybe it's the first time I wrote in this thing. But I did go back and I pulled out my vision board because I feel like it's all the same, whether you writing it down, whether you vision board it or whatever the case is. And what I realized is when I did this vision board, I remember exactly when I did this. This is in 2014. The whole purpose of me doing this vision board is I was talking to this nigga and I was like, we should do this together. So it had nothing to do with what's on this board.
I actually remember that.
It has everything to do with the fact that we were spending time together. And I wrote all of these things on the board. And I brought it back out today because I still have it. Because this whole concept of you don't have to redo a vision board every year. You literally can add on or check things off. And I'm looking at the board and I was like, yeah, I've done about one of these things. Yeah. One or two of these things. But it's nuts because we oftentimes will do something in the moment, don't think about it, go on about our lives, move about the cabin, that's what I call it. and then we go back to that thing and be like, shit, I said this. This is what I said I wanted to do, or this is what I said I was looking for, and it hasn't come to fruition.
It's a record. I think that's the thing about journaling that is probably the hardest. It is a record of who you are in space and time, right? And going back to that and reviewing that at a later time when you're a different person or a new person can reveal a whole lot about how you think. And I think that that's the part about it that one makes a lot of people uncomfortable. But two, it is, like you said, it's permanence. It's a lot to take in if you are willing to kind of dive in and really kind of give yourself to the process of journaling. Yeah, and I've been doing it for a while and I don't always go back, but yeah, more recently I started going back and just to kind of think about what I was thinking about. How was I thinking at this time? What was I thinking about at this time? Yeah, and it just, I think it just has revealed one of the more larger issues at hand is that one of the things you actually get to see is that you get to see it's not just a record, but a repeating of things, right? Like you see a trend. And I think that's probably the hardest part, right? Like you start to see a trend, you're like, oh shit, like I'm fucking up. Like I'm doing the same. You know, no, really.
The same people, the same thing. I'm absolutely
the same type of people. I'm asking for the same type of thing. I'm repeating the same type of behavior and I'm not changing. I think this last time has really kind of struck me a little bit differently in that I'm like, damn, like there's an issue here. there's a real issue here. And just like I think that in terms of like what I've discovered about myself is that like I have to, aside from all the things that you've been through, I have to start looking at, and I think we talked about this before, about how I look at relationships, that looking at them outside of my past trauma, looking at them outside of superficiality, right? Like, what does it actually mean for John to want to be in a relationship or to be with someone in 2020? Like, what does it mean? Mm. You know, like you started this stuff in 2009, 2008, and nothing has materialized in the way you wanted it to, right? So what do you want? What do you want? You know, and
I think that's a very difficult question, because I think that we oftentimes create lists about who we want based on what we don't want.
That's true.
And never what it is we actually want. We always are like, they can't be this, they can't be that, they can't work here, they can't do, it's always these, it's an elimination list. It's all of the things that, it's all these disqualifiers, and we never take the time to say what we actually want. And when we do say stuff, it's very superficial, or very, what I call one note. It's like, I want them to be kind. I want them to be understanding. I want them to be patient.
There's an extreme. You're right. Like it's either, we're either really general or we're either too specific. And that it's like, what ends up happening is that you just end up in the same type of relationships. You never kind of get out of that, attracting the same people. And I think that that's where I'm at now, where you want to break that, right? Like that's why I'm actually asking myself these harder questions, these deeper questions, because I don't want the same thing that I've had. I don't want that. I'm 36 years old, right? Like I don't want this. I don't want to repeat the same cycle, but it's very, very hard to get out of that. It's very, very hard to start thinking about, you know, oh shit, I am attracting the same type of person. I am exhibiting the same toxic behavior. I am attracting the same type of people who are exhibiting the same toxic behavior, right? That takes work. It takes time. And I don't, to be honest with you, and we talk about therapy openly, it is between journaling, therapy, meditation, and a lot of other activities that actually have gotten me to the place where I can actually say, okay, let's stop. Let's look at this a little differently.
I think it's hard, because when you talk about doing the work, which is what therapy is about, it's about doing the work. I think people who aren't in therapy, who've never gone, have this idea about how it works, and it couldn't be further from the truth. It's like, I go, I tell the person my problems and they solve them, right? And then I go away happy, and that's not the case. And I think what you're finding out, what we all find out at some point, is I always say when I can't, when my relationship doesn't go the way I want it to, or if I don't attract the person that I want, I always blame the other person. It's always the other person. But the reality is at some point you have to be like, okay, can't smell like shit in every room. Yeah. It must be me at this point. And then it's like, well, I have to admit that I got some shit going on. And that, what do you mean? Like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm smart and I got a good job and I make good money. And, you know, I have all of these things going for me. So why is it that I can't seem to figure out, why can't I find somebody that's equally yoked? I hate that word, that phrase, equally yoked, but it's important.
I think that makes sense. I think that the one conversation that it is very hard for us, all of us, to have is that we attract people to the extent it is about how we feel about ourselves, right? Like if you attract a shitty partner, that's because there is some part of you that feels like you deserve a shitty partner. And that's the part that is the harder conversation. We don't take accountability for the people that we attract in our lives. We want to say that, oh, it only has something to do with them, but you attracted them and you welcomed them in your life, right? And so there's a part of that that I think I know that I've had to take responsibility for, that like I can't scapegoat them or say that, oh, they're the problem without acknowledging the fact that like I'm part of it too, right?
The role that you play.
We all play a different role in that. Like, you know, some people are looking for a savior. Some people can't help but try to save everybody, right? Like those are both equally toxic roles, right?
Get off my street.
And I play both. I play, you know.
I want no visitors. No, thank you. Close the gate. But you're right, though. I think it's important. Part of our off the, you know, our prep. This is how I'm really tapping into my journalism. Like our prep before we got to the call. I was kind of just rereading our conversation, and you said that at the time, you made that list. Or no, not at the time you made the list. At the time that you encountered this person that embodied a very large percentage of this list that you created that was to represent your perfect mate, that when you actually encountered this person, you were looking for validation and not love.
Oh, so this is going to be a therapy session, huh?
Not at all, because I'm not a therapist. I'm not a therapist. I just think that, you know, the reality is, and I said this in the, you know, when I was talking about the episode before you joined, that the conversation that we are having now is a conversation that we've had ad nauseum. Like we've had it a million times, and no friend group is different. I've been in groups with other people, and it's the same thing. We eventually get to the point where it's like, why are we so good and can't find nobody worth our time? Like that's literally the conversation in all of the groups. And so I think it's important, because we're all having the same conversation and we're all kind of having the same struggles. And I think that's why people have decided that, I don't want to say that people are leaning more towards this, but it seems that people are leaning more towards non-monogamous relationships or polyamory or open relationships, because they honestly feel like they can't get what they want in one, you know, with one person. So I think that's some of that's the problem. So that's the whole reason why I asked, like, you know, the whole concept of validation versus not looking for love.
You know, that's heavy. That's heavy stuff, I think. But it's real.
Absolutely.
I think that, and this is just my own personal experience, I do think it is more probably broadly a reality than we actually want to admit. But here's my belief is, well, at least for what I've been through, is that what I realized is that the people, the guys that I was attracted to or thought I wanted to be in relationship with or thought that I wanted to create a loving relationship with, the truth of the matter is what I really wanted intent-wise was validation. And that is a much different thing than creating a loving space or a loving relationship with somebody. The reality is that once the relationship happened and there was a requirement of me to give of myself in reality and actually love another person, I backed out because I'm like, this is not the shit that I signed up for.
You say, so when you say that, what did you need? What did you need?
I wanted someone, and this is a very honest me admitting this, but I wanted someone to tell me that I was okay. And people do that in various ways. It's not always verbal. Affirmation comes in, you know, just having someone, or it can come in the form of gifts. It can come in the form of someone loving and taking care of you. That's the affirmation I wanted. I didn't sign up for a relationship. And it is me at 36 realizing after two relationships, 2.5. We always say 2.5, but we know what,
two and a possible. We know what that 0.5 like is.
But after those relationships, realizing that they weren't all the problem. They weren't all the problem. A big part of it was that my expectations were not aligned to the truth, or what I actually wanted was not aligned to what I was actually putting out there and pursuing. And it just took a very long time for me to actually have that conversation about what I really wanted. And I think even now I'm still having that conversation about what I really want. I think a lot of us, and this is for, I don't know that we can, I think we can probably say everyone, gay people and straight people alike, is that we go in with dishonest intentions, or we are unaware of what we really want. And so we go in a situation like, oh, I want a partner, I want a loving relationship. But then when the work of a loving relationship comes about, then it's like, oh, no, not that part. Just
not the work. Oh, part. Not the work part. Oh no.
Just the part where show you fawn over me and you love me and people see us and we're happy. Yeah, sign me up for that part. But don't sign me up for the part where I actually have to take into consideration your own past and your trauma and love you past all of that. Like that, I don't want to do that. You mean accept you for who? Oh, that's not what I want to do. So that is, and to be honest with you, like I don't know that I actually had a really good idea even what love was, right? Like I have a better idea now, but no, you know, in those relationships that I was in, no, not at all. Not at all. Like I have no idea.
So are you any closer today to knowing what you want romantically? And kind of disassociating from the what you call the whimsical and fantasy version of
we have this a good mate. Friend together that always says this one line, which is that the butterflies are bullshit. And it's not in any way to like discourage or to look down upon that phase in love where you're like excited about somebody, but it is really to make sure that you're putting weight on the right part of it, that you're not putting the emphasis on that initial kind of meat, right? And that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
I'm actually realizing, for the first time in my life that, like, I hate saying it like that, that the butterflies are bullshit, but I understand now that I can't put the weight of a relationship on that initial phase. Like you have to actually, and we've talked about this, you actually have to do the work of getting to know somebody. You have to do the work of like, oh, is this person actually compatible for me? And so to your question, closer, yes, in that regard that like I realize that the values that or where I put the weight on the relationship in terms of values, like it can't be on, you know, that initial attraction. It has to be on other things. I went on a date today, you know, I'm asking different questions. I want to know different things because you gotta like that motherfucker after. I'm sorry. Is this PG? I don't know. Okay. Yeah. You gotta like that motherfucker after the sex is over. You gotta like that motherfucker after, you know, y'all have a fight. You know, like, you can't just bail out, you know?
Yeah.
You right, not if you want something long lasting. Yeah, I think you know one of my, you know, I love Different World, and I relate everything to like television shows and movies and different things like this. But you know, Whitley and Dwayne, I guess, are the quintessential goals, even though other people are saying no, they're not really goals, they have problems. But one of the things that Dwayne said to Whitley when they were having a conversation after they had broken up and had moved on with their lives is, you know, the bedroom was never the problem. It was the other rooms that we had issues in. You know, we were always good there, but having those conversations outside of the bedroom was difficult. And you're right, because, you know, the reality is we present a
We
representative
sure
and we
do.
meet a representative. And after you get into a relationship and people feel more comfortable with letting their hair down, you know, like with women, that's when they start wearing the bonnet. You can see the bonnet. Yeah, that's what happens in relationships. People start to just kind of let their hair down, and they let some of that stuff show. And you know what my grandma used to say, your slip showing. It's like that, all that
They ain't
stuff that they
hiding no
used to
more.
hide. You know, they ain't had it no more. You know, before I remember, you know, getting ready for a hookup, and it's like you clean your house in like 20 minutes. You like throw everything away and the house looks spotless, but all you did was like, you know, it was like spit shine. But in relationships, you know, stuff start falling out the closets because you've packed them so
And you
tight.
can't,
You know
there
what I'm
comes a
saying?
point where
All of the
you
things you
can't
try to
hide
hide
it
is almost,
anymore, right?
you can't hide it anymore. You just have to be like, okay, this is who I am, as raggedy and flawed as I am. But I also think you made a good point that it's never one person's fault. And even if it's a situation where you're in a relationship, now let's be clear, we're not excusing shitty behavior because that occurs. But what I will say is, what I have learned is, if you don't speak up about the shitty behavior, if you don't say, hey, this doesn't make me feel good, or this isn't right, or I don't, this isn't cool, then you're kind of giving that person permission to kind of act out that way. And in that regard, you've kind of played into it as well. Like, you know, you have a voice. You need to say when shit ain't right and not just let people just kind of do their thing and not check it. That creates an issue too. So I do believe that, you know, both people play a role, whether when things work and when things don't work. We always like to just say it's one person's fault why it all fell apart. But therapy has helped me realize that
No,
that is
no,
not
no.
the
I think
case.
that's fair. I think that's right. I think that's fair. But I do think too that like that there is, and you know, we talk about therapy a lot, you know, because we are both actively. Well, I mean,
A
but it's
lot.
important, right? Like we're both actively in therapy. I think that, you know, if I could talk about black men for a minute, that I think we are problematic in that we are. No, we are. We really are. We really. Let's just be honest. Like black men, I'm a black man. You're a black man. Like we aren't. Some of us are doing our work, but we are torturing our partners because we aren't, and this is both heterosexual and gay. Like we are torturing our partners because we aren't doing the work. You know, relationships are going to have their problems anyway, but I think if you are both actively working, both actively separately and then together working out ways to improve yourself through therapy, right? And through other means of, you know, making sure that you're communicating together, you can guarantee success, but we don't do, we're not doing the work, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny because in obviously in therapy, my therapist is like, you know, it's not unreasonable to
Require, you know?
request or require that the person that you're dealing with sees a therapist, especially if you identify that they need to. And let's be clear, if you are a
You need
black
to.
gay man,
I
you
would
need
take
therapy.
it as I would say
You
all
need
black people
therapy.
do, but I think black men specifically need, because,
Yeah,
okay, black
definitely.
American men.
Yeah, but see, I'm not dating gay. I'm not dating straight black men. So if they go to therapy, great. If they don't, yeah. I'm specifically talking about my pool
We need it.
of eligible bachelors. I want all of them to be in therapy. We need it, you know, because there's a lot that we've had to deal with. To there, it's a reckoning. It literally is a reckoning to become who we are today. Like I can say that at 35, I'm pretty comfortable with who I am, but I still have struggles. But I'm definitely better at 35 than I was at 25. The things that I say, the things that I talk about, the mere fact that I have a podcast, the 25-year-old me would have shuddered at the idea of being on a podcast talking about being a Black gay man and trying to navigate the world. Like, hell no. So I've definitely grown, but you know, I've had conversations with other people who are not in therapy, and they're like, I think it's unrealistic to require that of somebody you're dating. And I'm like, I don't. And that's how I know that we're not compatible, because you don't feel that way. I think it's important, especially when you notice that there's issues. You know what I'm saying? When you notice there are things that are above you. Like, you know, we could talk through a lot of things, but when I notice that there are things that are above me, my suggestion is going to be, maybe you should talk to someone. I always say you should go sit on, you should talk to somebody who has degrees and things in this area.
We retired.
I do not, you know.
We retired from that role. I totally agree that, like, yes, it the thing is, it, everybody has their own journey, right? Like, and I can't do your work for you.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's okay that for it to be a requirement in a relationship, because I can't, there's, you know, my ex, like, there was a point where it was like, well, there's nothing I can do anymore. Like, I can't be your therapist.
Yeah.
I can't help you in this situation because I'm not living it, but you not addressing it is affecting both of us. Like, it is destroying both of us.
Right.
So you got to do your work. You got to do your work by yourself. And I don't feel like it is worse for me to be in a relationship with you and then try to baby you and coach you to that than just to require it up front. Like, let's cut the bullshit. If you're not in therapy, we can't date. Sorry, we can't date.
So is that part of your... Yeah, I always tease you because I feel like you have like this dating questionnaire. And so I feel like you go out on this date and like you guys sit down and you have drinks and you're like, let's get into it. And you immediately pull out like this Steno pad and you start flipping the pages.
I'm not
and,
that
like,
pedantic.
This is what I envision. Start flipping the pages.
It's a little smoother. I do have the questions in my head though, but it's not that, like, you know, I'm pulling out a pad and asking them a bunch of questions. But I've always asked a lot of questions, but I do think now I'm just asking a lot. I'm asking more pertinent questions about, like, who you are, what your background is, if you're in therapy. The date I went on tonight, though, I did not ask that question, if you're in therapy. And here's it. I didn't, you know, and here's the thing.
You didn't.
A lot of times guys will, this is the new thing. I don't know if you caught this, but a lot of guys will talk about their therapist because it is the popular thing now to say that you have a therapist. And so you'll hear it's a setup.
It's the setup. It's the bang. That's
what
a
they,
setup. I'm
what
not
they
going
mean
for
is their friend. They're not talking to a therapist. They're talking to their friends. So I talked to my therapist the other day. You mean your friends? Your mama? You talk to your mama or you talk to...
Well, listen, I do think it's important to have therapists that you can drink with. Because I do.
Do you drink
you know
with your
why?
Therapist?
Because I think that...
Oh, no.
No,
friends,
no. Okay. I mean your friends. That's what I call it.
Oh, okay.
Therapists you can drink with are your friends. So, no. I think it's important because having been in a relationship with a person who was introverted and didn't necessarily have a lot of friends, I feel like there are situations that we went through where their friends would have been like, baby, wake up. Like, don't you see? Don't you understand? Like, that's what your friends are good for. Yeah, they can't necessarily analyze you and get into all of the childhood trauma, but they can't snap you out of shit. And your friends are really good for being like, bitch, you tripping. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need that. Your therapist won't necessarily say that, but you do need your, I think friends
but
are
I would
that
say though that
regard.
So that type of friendship is a special friendship. And I would say that a lot of people don't have that. My ex actually did not have those type of relationships, and he was probably more I don't know, but like, he was probably closer to the, I would say straight guys don't talk about things. Like, they're not having the same type of conversations that we're having, and they're definitely not having the same type of conversations that women are having with each other. And so there is not going to be that accountability check.
See, I think that's
you don't
a stereotype,
think that's the truth,
and it's not fair. And I use my I use my dad as an example, but I do understand that my dad might be on, he might be an exception to the rule. But like my, he's the first person, my dad is the first person who, well, I won't say the first person, but he basically said that one of his favorite books is The Five Love Languages. And when he has friends who gets married, that's what he gifts them.
Well, your dad is very emotionally intelligent too. Like, I don't know that, and this is not a slight towards straight men to say that they aren't emotionally intelligent.
I mean, well, if
the shoe fits,
if the shoe fits,
but that that's what, you know. Listen, I've been in these rooms, and literally, they're not talking about shit. Like, they're talking about, you know, they might be talking about the game.
That's true.
They might be talking about, you know, the more objective side of, like, look, you know, women or even men, but. They're not talking about the deep things. They're not talking about their, and this is about, like, how we are socialized too. Black men and white men, probably too, straight men, white straight men, are not socialized to talk about how they feel. And that's where the accountability piece comes in, when you are open and vulnerable enough to talk about how you feel, and you have friends who can then say, oh, I don't know if that's, you should be thinking about it like that, right? That's not the conversations they're having. So, I mean, I think that's actually the first step into all of this, is that they, you know, there just isn't a certain, there is a lack of being vulnerable and just talking about your feelings. So,
definitely. I agree with that. So we started off, you know, the topic, or the title of this week's episode is the one that got away. And I feel like we've gotten away from that. Do you still think that person, you know, looking back at your list, thinking about who you are now, do you still think that person is the one that got away?
Well, because it is, if I can give some depth to it, is that I believe opportunity is everywhere, right? So in the sense of my real life, I don't believe that there is the one that got away, because if one got away, another one is on the way, right? But with that, okay. I will say that a good one got away. And if I were in a more solid place emotionally at that time, they would not have gotten away.
Is there a chance for you to go get them?
That oh gosh. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would actually say yes. And even though there is some hesitance on their part towards me because of the way that I acted the first time around, I'm horrible at, we talked about this before, I'm a horrible ghoster. Like, I don't, and this is immaturity, like, I'm working on it, we're gonna get better in 2021, but
time in 2020. No, it's only October.
Fresh start, January 1st.
You're just gonna wait. You're gonna put it off.
Yes,
okay.
Gabby.
Okay, gotcha. New Year's resolution. Less ghosting. Gotcha.
I've been a horrible ghoster, and that's actually one of the reasons we broke up, because we had a fight, and then I went like 2 weeks, and I just didn't say anything. But
but y'all were still together in that time frame. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I think there is the potential there. To be quite honest with you, I think it has less to do with them and more to do with me. I don't even trust my own emotions in the situation. So I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't even, okay. I would not advise them to trust it either. it's, you know, so.
Gotcha. So what would you say to somebody who is in your position and realizes that they let a good one get away? They played it wrong. They made mistakes. They weren't a great person. So they put the other person in the situation that makes them very, very hesitant about even giving them another
question.
Shot.
I think
what would you say to that person?
They, if it, it, me being me, you got, like, even with this person, like, there is no, I can't push it. I can't force it. Like, even in our interaction today, there is hesitancy on their side. I get the sense, but the fact that they're still communicating with me, actually, and this is why I hesitated earlier with your first question, is the fact that they still communicate with me gives me an indication that I still have a chance. There is still the opportunity.
Don't tell the people that.
There wasn't an opportunity, you wouldn't respond to my text. You wouldn't respond to my calls, right? But I think that I know how to play this, and I hope they don't listen. It is very much a game.
Is it a game? Hope they're not listening. I don't think your ex is a co-host. I think you're good.
Maybe, but I would. I'll just tell you how I'm going to play this. One, I'm not 100% sure that I want to, like, be there. Right, I need a part of me wants the affirmation that they still want me.
Those are old habits,
in
2021, John.
January 1st. Meet me there.
I think we need to work on the validation today.
I think that, you know, I'm still deciding how I want to play it. But if I were to decide tomorrow morning that this is the person that I want, the way that I would honestly play it, and the way that John has always played this, is that it is not a demonstrative act. It is I'm going to go away again. This is very manipulative. I should not say this out loud.
This is awful.
We're on a whole other topic right now.
No, I'm gonna call her.
But I would play it.
Y'all need to talk about these games
of not being demonstrative and just backing off and, like, making sure that this is the thing about, like, a manipulative ex, and that I've been this manipulative ex, is that exes show up occasionally, purposefully. The reason is to make sure that I still have a presence in your mind. I still have a presence in your heart, right? And it's like a breadcrumb trail. Like, eventually we'll get to a place. Then we'll start hanging out. I'm gonna text you a few times. You're gonna respond. I'm gonna call you a few times. You're gonna pick up. And then one of those calls is gonna be, let's meet for dinner. Let's meet for lunch. And then that lunch is going to turn into, well, I'm just going to come by. So if I were going to play it in terms of, like, keeping this person around and wanting to eventually materialize a relationship, I'm going to do it slowly. And I'm not just going to do it slowly. I'm going to make sure that I have a presence consistently with you. It would not be a demonstrative act, because I don't think that people respond well to force, manic behavior. Force. Like, people don't respond to that. What they respond to is me going out, keeping a presence in your life, but me going out, living my life, having fun. You might occasionally see me out with somebody, or you might see on my social media that I'm out with somebody. Now I got you thinking. So now when I have the opportunity to, like, really close the deal, then, you know, I've planted the seed, I've watered it, now we can go in for it. Like,
I'm gonna have to cut this part of the podcast, because I feel like you're giving tips. I know
manipulative exes because I've had some, and I've been one. They exes do one of two things when they keep a presence. It is either to eventually I'm going to close the deal, or B, a lot of people don't realize this one, I don't want to close the deal and I don't want to be with you anymore, but I want to maintain a presence to make sure that you don't find somebody before I do. They're horrible habits. But aren't these bad habits?
No, we trying to get people the good way of moving forward.
If you are the person being pursued by an ex, you should run the other way. But this is what you get for inviting your most toxic.
That's your advice
to the show.
I don't think you're my most toxic. Probably I actually think you're saying things that are very helpful. You say, oh, I don't know. No. I think what you said makes sense. And I think you're saying good things. I think that, you know, I think we live and we learn. You know, we're not the same people we were 10 years ago. Sure. Goodness, if I could go back and talk to my 25-year-old self, the things that I would tell him. The things I would tell him to avoid, because as I look at this vision board that is in no way a representation of my life currently. When I see, that's coming very soon. I put on here like a body. It is. But I didn't put it on here at the time because I don't know. I was in a really bad way. I wasn't even in an entanglement. That's what the young folks call. They call it an entanglement. I was in a fuck up situation. It just wasn't good.
We do better. We do better when we know better.
It's bad.
So
sometimes not.
Do we? I don't know. No, I think we do. I think that, you know, now that I have experienced being in a relationship, because that was my, I won't say my downfall, but that was just, I just hadn't been in one. You know, now that I've experienced being in a relationship, I do look at things a lot differently. Because I think that I entered into my relationship being ready. And what I learned over time is, it's not that my partner didn't want to be in a relationship at the time. They did. They just didn't have the capacity to be in the type of relationship that one they said that they wanted to be in, and definitely one that I wanted to be in. And so those were the limitations, you know? And so I struggle with this when we're talking about reconciliation and different things like that, because I'm in that space where I am trying to figure out, do I allow a second chance or do I move on?
No, it's
and that's
it's,
a tough it's, place it's, to be it's, in. That's a really yeah, tough
I guess
place
so.
To be
it
in.
Is a tough place. I don't, you know, it's interesting your position. I was like trying to like empathize and put myself in that position, and I guess I've been the fuck boy so much that I don't have that reality. But I honestly, I think that just knowing my own behavior, that it no, I guess yes, it is a tough position. I think that. No, it's I guess tread lightly. I don't know. It's a scary thing, you know.
You know, I'm gonna tell you. I was talking to another friend offline, and what he said, I think, was probably the most valuable piece of information that I've received, and it really put me. It stopped me. Because I was like, well, shit. You know, every once in a while somebody says something to you, you're like, well, damn. Like, I really do have to consider this. This is too good for me to ignore. And he said, you have to understand that change doesn't happen overnight. It's progressive. And even if a person is actively working to change, anything can happen that could trigger, you know, one of those bad moments, one of those, you know, a trauma moment that kind of takes them back down an old path because old habits die hard. And he said, what you have to commit to, or what you have to decide for yourself, which he said, I could not in my relationship, is if who you are today is willing to be in relationship with
somebody that's real.
Practicing.
I think that is extremely real, because it, I think the main thing about it is that change, and you said this part, but the change has to happen because I want it to happen, because John wants it to happen. John at 36 is realizing that he has to change. But if you would have forced this on me or told me this at 28, I mean, I would have done all of the ceremonies necessary to keep up the image of change. But change happens when a person decides for themselves, not because of somebody else, but because of for themselves, that I want to change. And I think that that's the important piece here, is that, like, are people in your life wanting to change for themselves, or because they think it will get a certain response? Like, those are two different things. One lasts and one doesn't.
And I guess the other, but the caveat to that is you don't know if the change is for them or you unless you allow
yourself I think you know when the change is personal, right? Like, if I put myself in it, the change is personal and it is my own decision. When you see me out living my life and you see an improved scenario, see, my mom always said this thing about, and this is a little churchy, but she said, you know, a tree by the fruit it bears. Is that scripture? You know, I'm not real churchy, but like, is that scripture? Okay,
that is definitely scripture. It is. Well, because it's the thing. So I'll give you a prime example, and this is totally off the rip, but this is how I do. When my grandfather passed away, someone spoke at my grandfather's funeral who knows me and my father. And her response was, I never met Otis.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know anything about him, but you know a tree by the fruit he bears. And I know for a fact that Philip Sr. and Philip Jr. are good fruit. So it must have been a good tree. It had to be a good tree. I ain't miss shit. It would have been great to know him, but and I knew him through the fruit he bears. So it's that, definitely.
The person's life improve outside of you. Right. Like, if you were to look in a window and you're like, oh, damn, you finished that degree. Oh, damn, you bought a new car. Oh, you cut your toxic older brother off or whatever the situation. You know, if you see their life improving on their own and that tree is bearing fruit, then you're like, damn, you made some changes for yourself. And now we're seeing the result of that. But if you're just like, I don't see any of that shit. And you just, that it's like. Like, you still doing the same shit. You still working the same job. You still doing the same shit. Then that means that you haven't put into the situation that would create a new reality for you. I feel like that is the reality doesn't lie, right? Like, if somebody's, you know, down and out all the time, life is hard. I get it. You know, you don't judge me on this comment, but life is hard. I get it. But I do think that, like, it ain't supposed to be hard all the time. So at some point.
No, I'm not judging you at all. I'm not judging you at all. I think that the difference is, listen, we all have good and bad days. And I've talked about this being in this COVID environment. Like, we have all experienced what I would consider some low grade depression, you know, being in this situation where we're isolated. We can't see our family. We can't see loved ones. We can't do some of the things that we love. Some people love to travel. So to be in a situation where, you know, I have friends who literally, I actually know friends, they're a couple, and they plan their trips out a year in advance. And so to have to cancel, and they literally would go out of town like every 2 months, they would go somewhere. And so for your whole year to be changed because you can't do those things like that, that's got to be depressing, to cancel trips, to get your money back in the whole 9 yards. That's normal. Yeah. We all go through that. But a constant state of depression? Yeah, boo-boo, you need to... Yeah, you gotta talk through that. And it's even worse when it's a situation where it's like, I'm depressed. I realize I'm depressed. And, you know, then you're like, well, you know, hey, girl, go get, you know, you should talk to somebody about that. No, I don't want to talk to nobody. So you just want to, you don't want to be depressed, but you don't want to work.
One thing I used to do in all of my relationships, and this is actually behavior that I didn't know. There was an intensity, right? Whenever we would fight or we would break up. And then there's this period where like you miss them. And there's just this very intense feeling that you get. And what I recognized about all of those times when I would like, oh, you actually remember, because there were times when I would sleep on your floor because thank you. I would leave in the middle of the night, angry. And, you know, I think it was a mattress, and it was one of those portable mattresses in my trunk, and I would bring it to Phil's house and I'd lay it on the floor. And it was high drama. It was, you know, it was Night at the Fox. Like, it was a lot going on. And what I realized about that time is that I was repeating behavior from relationship to relationship, but it had nothing to do with any of them. It was all me. And what we figured out in therapy is that
it was
from a traumatic childhood. It was from a childhood of neglect and rejection from a father, and then trying to recreate that through intimate relationships later on in life. And that's what the intensity part is. And this is the part that people don't get. And this is why I say therapy is important, is that that intensity that you feel, what you don't realize is that it doesn't belong to this situation or that person. There's a piece of it that belongs to the situation and that person, but the direness of it is not real. It is. I remember there were times that I would, like, you know, I moved across the country, and it was an intense feeling. Like, I gotta be near this person. I gotta be with this person, but it wasn't the person. It was me trying to satisfy, to hug 4-year-old, 5-year-old John. That hug came later on in life. And when you get it at 22, oh, you can't let it go. Because you've missed it your entire life.
Yeah. Now you get it. Because you've been missing it for years.
Able to replicate that situation for you. So, and this is big. Subconsciously, you don't know the difference. Your body, this is actually a book about this that I can encourage everyone to read. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. Your body remembers that. So it's you were 5 years old. You haven't had that hug or that feeling since then. You've missed it. And for the first time, 22, you get it again. Your body says, oh, you cannot let this go. So now you put yourself in situations where you're like, well, whatever I need to do to make sure that I feel this again and that this is continued, I will do. And then you start with the words to the partner. I won't do this anymore. I won't go through your phone anymore and act crazy. I won't show up at your, I'm not saying that this was me. This is a friend who told me about this, the stuff that they were. I saw it on.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. This is something that you witnessed. I got it.
But in reality, like, you don't realize, your conscious mind does not realize that that is what's happening, that you are literally replicating a situation from your childhood. It doesn't belong to the people who you think it belongs to. And that's why you feel that intensity. Without it, you wouldn't feel that intensity. And people have questions like, why are you acting like this? And that they didn't understand what my body physically was going through.
That is crazy. You know, it's funny. I was just talking to my godmother. Shout out to one of my favorite Libras in the whole wide world. And she was basically, you know, kind of recounting a story that she was talking to one of her other godchildren. And she was basically saying that whole concept of going through phones. And she was like, listen, she said, that's an invasion of privacy. It's wrong. It is wrong. And she said, what you need to do is you need to pray for discernment. Because those things reveal themselves to you. You do not have to go through someone's phone. You do not have to go through someone's things in order to figure out what it is you need to figure out to make make the determination whether that you should go or stay. Like, it's going to show up. She basically, what she said, she was like, men are never stupid, have to. And eventually they're going to fuck up and you're going to figure it out. You don't have to go through their phones to do it. And, you know, I think about that because it's so crazy. And I think you know this from being in relationships and from being on the other side. You've told your friends, don't do this, because either you've done it and you know that it didn't work out, or you just fundamentally know it ain't the right thing to do. Exactly. And then you find yourself in situations that you're doing the same shit you told other people not to do. Because you know that it's wrong and you know that it's not going to pan out and you do it anyway. I guess knowing that you're going to find something, but really hoping that you don't, which is like the dumbest thing ever. Right. Like, I know that there's something here, but I'm going to go through it anyway. It's a bad position
to be in. I think to your point about, like, you're looking, you don't want to find anything, but you do want to find something, but you don't want to find something. So it's like this really bad cyclical process of, like, trying to figure out what you want. It is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I've spent my time.
That's what it is. Just no more. Utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
I haven't gone through a phone in.
You're done. Are you officially done? Are you done with that?
24 hours? No, I'm joking. No. More like my last relationship. Yeah, it's like 5-7. Now I sound like a charade on joggers. 5 years. joggers. March, April, May. No. Yeah, it's a while. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, haven't been through a phone in a while. No. So let's talk about what is, I think we're not all of us are struggling, but a lot of us are struggling trying to find the balance of what a healthy relationship is. And I know you mentioned something about not being able to look to the heterosexual counterpart to kind of find inspiration. You say, oh, I didn't even get it out. You totally were like, already. So this is the thing. This is what I'll say, because I do a lot of times reference my dad and my mom being my stepmom, who I call my bonus mom. I reference them because I feel like they have a really good relationship, because I feel like they're friends. But I also understand that, you know, as you get older and you actually get a chance to talk to your parents about their relationships, I do realize that nothing is perfect and that there are inconsistencies. There are issues, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're normal people. Like, they do disagree. They don't see eye to eye on everything. And one of the things that my dad, which I find hilarious, is when he talks about love languages. He was like, so my love language is, I think my dad said, like, acts of service. And he was like, your mom's love language is physical touch. And she said, we don't have no problem until she tried to make her love language my love language, because I don't like physical touch. So, which I think is so funny. But, you know, yeah. I look at their relationship and I say, these people are friends. Like, they actually enjoy each other's time. They enjoy each other's company. They like doing things together. Do they do things apart? Absolutely. And I'm like, that's all I really want. You know, I want somebody who has a life of their own. But I don't want islands. And I hate top islands.
Compartmentalization. So yeah.
This is my family island. This is my friend island. This is my man island. I hate that shit. We all got to be on the same island, because I've always envisioned having a partner that can be around my friends, that can you be want around my family. Love. Like, I don't want to create these separate things, because I think it's whack.
It's crock pot love. You want everything in one pot.
Is that, that what we call it?
Separate things. I get you. One pot meal.
Yes. I love one pot meal. So when you on YouTube and you like, yeah, put everything in this pot. I make one pot chili. I put everything in that fucking one pot. Or it's one skillet chili, actually, for me. But one skillet chili. I wanted everything there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I hate the whole concept of compartmentalization, because I feel like it's disingenuous. I feel like if there's any aspect of your life that you have to keep, now I don't mix friends, but that's something different. But I feel like if there's any aspect of your life that you feel like you have to keep,
yeah, I think that's
separate from other aspects of your life. There's probably
I think that when that. And I'm not a big person with compartmentalizing things. I have friends who do that, but I think that that is a coping mechanism or a way to make yourself feel safe. And what we actually use this word a lot in therapy is safety, because mm-hmm. I never equated safety and love as something that mattered, but it does. And when is it, I mean, for the thing is that people,
it's a very new realization things, for me too,
these barriers when they don't feel mm-hmm. safe. And I, you know, I have a friend who I actually spoke directly about that, about mm-hmm. feeling safety, and they actually rejected it. Like, no, I feel safe. I don't like those words, you know, but I think that, I would say one, it's an unhealthy behavior. And then two, I would say that I think that, yeah, they people create those types of walls and those barriers. Cause I don't know that's organically and naturally how we live our lives. Like, I don't, you know, to some extent, work life is compartmentalized. Like, my coworkers don't come over my house and hang out with me. But I think but ideally though, like, I think it could be a good situation if you liked each other, right? It could be a good situation where I didn't have to keep them at bay or separate. The reason I do is for the reason that we just talked about, is that I don't feel safe around them, right? I don't feel that they would respect my space or respect me in a certain, you know? So I totally think it's an unhealthy behavior. And it's something that I actually don't, I had an ex who was in the closet, and his life was very much compartmentalized. We spent He was a phone booth. I hope he's not listening.
He was in the phone.
His phone booth analogy came from.
I don't think he's a co-host either.
He would always say he was in the phone booth, and I would say, "No, yeah, yeah. Everybody knows."
You are in an invisible tank.
Was great. It was that, like, when it came to. Yeah, when it came time to share that home space or to holidays were very difficult. Really?
You know what? I learned that from you. I learned in my relationship the very first year, I only went home for Thanksgiving because my partner at the time said that they were possibly going to go home for Thanksgiving. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going home for Thanksgiving. I haven't been home for Thanksgiving in years. I'm going to go. I said, but Christmas, I'm going to stay here with you. Because my whole thing was, even though they were a person who didn't necessarily grow up in a situation where they had, you know, a big holiday type of deal or whatever the case is, I'm one of those people who feels very firmly that people should not be alone during the holidays. Because it's a very difficult time for a lot of people, and I can tell you because I have
during the holiday
definitely lost some of the most significant people in my life between October and January. So it's just a very tough time, and I don't think people should be alone. And I was like, I don't want you know. My thing is this: people have had some shitty childhoods, and what you find is when people are doing extravagant things in their adulthood, that's because they had shitty childhoods. I don't have my daddy threw me birthday parties. So when people like, let's have birthday party, I'm like, no, thank you. I've already done this. I've done birthday parties my whole life. But when you have people who are like, I'm celebrating the entire month of October. Those are people who did not have birthdays when they were growing up, you know, or people who, you know, people who fantasized about weddings. So I think that as an adult, you can choose to leave some of your childhood trauma behind. If you didn't celebrate birthdays when you were a kid and you always want to, as an adult, you are well within your right to do that. So do that. So I say that to say that, you know, I learned from you, like, holidays, you was like, oh, I want to create this memory with my partner about
holidays.
Bring
it up the past, you had a relationship
where that was new to you. And it was like, well, I'm just saying, this is what I'm saying. Listen, my auntie always says, you don't always have to learn from because you fuck shit up. You can really look at other people's situations, good, bad, ugly, and indifferent, and kind of graft from that. And so I realized that even though people say things aren't a big deal, they typically are. And so I was like, well, I don't want my partner to feel like I'm just going to ditch them for the holiday and go home and spend time with my family, knowing that Christmas is the most important holiday to my father. So I sacrificed going home for Christmas because I went home for Thanksgiving to be with my partner. And my dad was literally like, well, I'll pay for your ticket. Literally, this is how it was. I was like, no, I'm going to stay here. Because at the time, I wasn't like, Dad, I'm in a relationship. So that was part of the thing. But I was like, I'm just going to stay here and hang out with friends. I got plans, blah, 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 blah. But it was really just to validate my partner at the time. So I learned that from you because that was a big deal for you. That was important to you. And I was like, when I get in a relationship, I'm going to make sure that I don't make this mistake because I don't want my partner to feel I don't want my partner to feel any way because I'm not around during the holidays. Thanks. I knew that.
Well, you know what? Listen, the next show you do, it needs to be on Crazy Boys. And if we've been texting all day and I don't respond because whatever, because I'm doing a podcast, don't call me. The fuck? You're going on block now.
Not blocking people. It happens. It's not a big deal. I think that's the beauty of it because it's really organic. Like, it's not polished in that way. So it's all good.
Okay.
It's all good. I was going to say, we were pretty much just talking about like holidays and the importance of that and how I learned from your experience. That was one of those things that I took from that situation. I don't ever want to be in a relationship where my partner doesn't feel validated or special. So I'm going to make sure that I set aside this time to be with them during the holidays. Well,
it's like, I heard that part. I was like thinking that it's a cruel thing. It is very, very cruel. And this is for all of your co-hosts who are either in DL relationships or like with someone who is quote unquote DL, that whole process of hiding a partner, and maybe this is a different podcast for a different day, it is a cruel thing. It is not only cruel, it is cruel to everyone. And I think what that person tells themselves is that I am being respectful of everyone. But what they really don't realize is that they're being a narcissist. It's really not about anybody else but them. I'm glad that you implemented that, because it was hurtful. It is very, very hurtful. And especially during the holidays, you're with somebody who you say you love and they say they love you. But during the time when everybody is with the people that they love, y'all are not together.
And you by yourself. I'm by myself. Looking crazy.
They're right, you know?
Absolutely not. No dice, not the thing. So let's talk about, and this will be like our last subject, because we have talked to people to death. This is probably one of the longest podcasts.
You're gonna really have to edit this thing. You can edit it down.
I ain't gonna edit it down. The people need to hear it. It's fine. People sitting at home, they can listen to podcasts.
Okay.
but I was gonna ask about this whole concept of like healthy, normal relationships. I know you gave me the whole ugh when I talked about heteronormativity and looking to them as an example. And I get that their lives are functionally different, but is it possible? I believe that it's possible. But I feel like when we start talking about open relationships and polyamory and polygamy or whatever you call it, and nothing against it, if that's what you choose, like this is, I'm not hating, do what you do. But I think we're at that place because people really have lost faith in the fact that you can be in a healthy, monogamous, homosexual relationship and it just be enough.
Well, I think that is, yeah. No, and you know my position on this. Like, I am so tired of the, and I don't know about the heteros. I'm going to talk about the gays for a second. Like, I'm so tired of their view or this kind of dominant view of, that's I don't want to say that it's not okay. I'm not convinced, and I don't know, this is a record, so I'm saying this like out loud, but like I'm not convinced that it's healthy. I'm not convinced that the way that a lot of gay men look at their relationships and that open, excuse me, bullshit like
Call it what you see it. Call
I'm not
it how you see it.
I'm not convinced that it is the deep connected relationship that they want, that anybody wants, right? Like I think that they're selling people on a bunch of, you know, being a bullshit. Like I think it is men making their own rules, which is fine, but not able to emotionally connect. And so they want companionship and they don't want to be, oh, this is really honest for a second, but they want companionship and they don't want to be alone. And so they're like, okay, well, let's just do this, right? But the truth is that there's a difference in when you are committed to something. And that has nothing to do with a relationship. That is just commitment in itself is virtuous, in my opinion, right? Like it is, there is something about when you commit yourself to a task, the things you learn about yourself and the things you learn about that thing that you're trying to conquer is completely different than if I have, how much do you actually learn when you're scattered? How much do you actually attain? How much do you actually grow when you got 20 or 30 different things going on at once, right? And to me, that when you decide to commit, I don't give a fuck if it's to work, if it's to a partner, if it's to a mission, you learn so much more. It's a different journey. It's a different path. And I'm not disqualifying the path of everything and everyone. I just don't think that there's much there. I think it's an empty fucking suit. And I'm like pretty emphatic about that, because I think that in our culture specifically, it is pushed on us like to the point that people tell us that that's really the only way. That's the only way you're going to be happy. And,
like, it's unattainable.
It's unattainable. But what guys don't realize is that they just, what they're actually telling the world and what they're actually telling us is that they just aren't equipped emotionally to go deep. You just don't have the tools. So you've decided to match up with someone else who doesn't have the tools, and then y'all just fuck all of the city. Great, fine. I don't want to participate. Can you please get off of my Tinder or whatever? You know, with the looking for a third. I feel pretty strongly about the fact that I just think it, I don't want to say that because I think when you go into the area of, like, you know, calling people gross and things, it's it is not helpful. But stay, what did Phaedra from The Real Housewives said, go away from me with that. Like, I don't want I don't want anything to do with it.
And I think that that's, I think that, you know, we all have a choice to say this is not for me and this, or this is for me. You know, I remember dating prior to being in a relationship and really enjoying the person, but at the time they wanted to be in something open. And I just wasn't there. You know what I was saying? And I hadn't experienced being in an actual committed relationship as an adult. And so I was like, I'm not saying that it's not a possibility. I'm not saying that I won't change or might not come to a place where I feel like this is okay. But as for right now, I'm not. And of course they respected that and there wasn't any issue, but it was just like, you know, when you hear people having the conversation, it's like, I think it's time out for saying we don't have any examples if there aren't people willing to be the examples. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, well, we don't have any examples. Like, well, we'll never have examples of niggas living in the closet for 60 years. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
We get two extremes in our world. They're either in the closet or they're in a relationship. And then they're open. And it's like, oh, God.
You know, it's crazy because growing up, I had an example in front of me and didn't even realize it was an example because it just wasn't in my in my image. No, not well, that too. Although,
Sorry, go ahead.
But not really. My Uncle Sydney was in a relationship with my Uncle Al, and even though they're not together anymore, I still call Uncle Al, Uncle Al, Uncle Sydney, Uncle Sydney. But they lived together, and you know, growing up, it just wasn't abnormal. I just thought that they were roommates. You know what I'm saying? I didn't think anything about it, but they traveled together and we traveled. It's my godmom's family. So it's actually my godmom's older brother, whose birthday is actually today. Happy birthday, Uncle Sid. And, you know, it was a situation where we traveled together. It was just normal. Yeah. It was just normal. And I never questioned, never thought about it. And it wasn't until I got an adult and I was like, wait a minute, they were together, together. You know what I'm saying? And while they were together, they were together. And even though they're no longer together, they're still really good friends. They're just not together anymore. And it's that's just it, you know? But it wasn't a situation where they weren't in, but they weren't out. You know what I'm saying? But they're also very different men in terms of how they express themselves. Like, you know, Uncle Al was, you know, he was into Prince, and, you know, he wore braids and he wore loud colors, and they were both really into working out and different things like that. So, I mean, but, you know, he had piercings and tattoos, and he was who he was, and didn't care what anybody thought about it. You know, they were who they were, but it was just different. And then you grow up and you get into the real world and you like, people really don't have this. You know, you have so many variations on relationships, and I've always desired to be in something healthy. And because I have been fortunate enough to see healthy heterosexual relationships in my family, you know what I'm saying? My dad, my grandparents, my uncle. I was like, well, it is possible. I never kind of created the link that say, well, it's not possible because I'm gay. I just was like, well, this is what I want too. You know, used to tease me all the time. I was like, I'm coming back to homecoming. I'm gonna have my husband. I'm gonna have my kid. I mean, and then a part of me was like, this shit ain't real. So I threw that out with the bathwater. And so now I'm back at that place where it's like, well, no, this really can be attainable. It's just got to be with the right person.
I think that, like, you're spot on. I think that it is. I actually think there are examples out there. I think black men, and I go back to black men, because that's who, you know, we live in Atlanta. It is the Black gay mecca of the world. And we just have trouble. We have trouble in this area. And not to say that there aren't examples within our small community, they're just few and far between, you know. And then the ones, the very popular couples are, you know, swingers to some extent, or they do the open relationship thing, right? Like, more power to them. Just go away from me with it. But it is, no, I think you're right. Like, it is, I think we're coming to a point where, and my therapist actually said this the other day, like, how, when are you going to come to the point when you become the example, right? Like, okay, I don't have examples. Great, right? But what are you going to do that's different?
Well, we know how you feel about this. You don't...
I'm nobody's role model. I'm waiting.
But my thing is, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be this whole concept of living out loud. Like, you know, we joke about this all the time. I'm not saying that you're gonna put on your P-flag shirt and get your rainbow flag and go out there twirling. But I do believe that, you know, there's part of me that wanted to do things right. You know what I'm saying? And there are, and I did see couples that were doing things right, and I wanted to spend time as a couple with those people, because I thought that that was important. You know, that's what happens with married couples. You know, we just have a best friend who got married. Shout out to Andromeda.
Congratulations.
But, you know, the reality is married people hang around married people. You know what I'm saying? Like, that happens. That happens, you know? People who have kids hang out with people who have kids. And it's not like they don't have time for their straight friends, but their groups in terms of how they travel, their groups in terms of how they socialize become more of the married cohort. And I just want a married cohort. That's all I want.
And I want you to have one. I want to have one too. But, like, I mean, who are we going to hang out with?
Well, we're going to hang out with each other.
And our straight friends too. Like, it'll be a mix. Like, I think that's the kind of mix
because we got good friends. Yeah, yeah. We got good friends, so we'll be good in that regard. But it's a, you know, I don't want to be the fifth wheel my whole life. You know what I'm saying?
I won't come. No,
you'll just stay at home.
I can be the third wheel, the fifth wheel. No,
but I think that there are people who are younger than us who are getting. Oh, because no! Everybody who I see getting married. In their 20s.
I think that generationally, I think we're like, you're definitely a millennial, but like, I'm like, well, we're the same, right? Older millennials, right?
Yeah, we're both millennials, but okay. I mean, but we're, if you want to be on the cusp,
I'm a cuspy millennial, but I do think that, you know, Gen Z, they are definitely handling this. It's not even Gen Z. I think some of the younger millennials and Gen Z are handling this a lot better. Right. They are looking at sexuality and its fluid nature, which it is. We weren't granted that. You always talk about how we didn't have the privilege of dating. And we don't know what that is in grammar school and high school. Right. Because we just, that wasn't our reality. And we didn't see a lot of people doing that. So I think that, I look at them in awe, actually, like, damn, they really, and I imagine that, like, probably some of the Gen Xers look at us like, "Whoa, they're so free," you know. But
I think it changes every generation. I mean, because let's be clear, the generation before you goes through certain shit so that have to, you know. And whether or not they want to be martyrs or not, because some people pride themselves on being martyrs, but whether or not they want to be martyrs or not, they are. And so they make certain sacrifices so that we don't have to. And you know, unfortunately, then they also try to guilt you and make you feel bad about it. But I mean, that's how it is. I'm not trying to make anybody younger than me feel bad about it. But I just know from being in college that, you know, I went all throughout college without being in a relationship. And I know people who was in college who have been through several.
That was both you and I. Like, we weren't doing relationships in college. We didn't do it.
But it wasn't because I didn't want to. It just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. It seems like the people that I was interested in were not interested in me in that way. It was a lot of missed opportunities, I guess, that lack for a better word. And I wish I kind of would have just dated some of the people I didn't want to be bothered with, just so I could say that I, you know, it's like a little experience.
We talk about that, and it's so interesting because I was like, you were fully aware of your sexuality, and I was not. Like I was just discovering myself at like that age and trying to figure out that, oh, I'm gay. I think, I don't even think at that time I was admitting that I was gay, but it's very,
yeah, everybody was doing the soft hand, which is what I call bisexuality. It's like, yeah mom, that's, I'm bi.
That's very true.
I call it the soft hand because it's like, I'm bi, although I watch all gay porn. I've never slept with a girl. I don't want a girl to be within 10 feet of me, but I'm bi because I do. I am attracted to, you know, the Halle Berry. So,
but you wouldn't know the issue. You know, you would disagree with this, but how many of us actually were bisexual, but society didn't allow, you know, this is a different podcast for a different day, but a lot of us probably were bisexual or are bisexual and just have not been able to express that side of ourselves because bisexuality is just now coming to a place where people are able to kind of talk about it. Like, it's not.
And I still don't get it. But no, what I will say is this. I will say, in terms of what you're saying does make sense, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm actually agreeing with you, which this is rare. So mark it on your calendar. I think that a lot of times society dictates you are a certain way and you do this a certain way. And because you act this way and look this way and dress this way and socialize this way, that doesn't allow you access or privilege to a particular thing. So I'm not going to say that I don't think women are attractive. I do. And I'm not going to say that I haven't been in situations or instances where something could have happened sexually between me and a woman, but they didn't. You know what I'm saying? And so I do feel you're right in that regard, that society has dictated in a lot of ways who we are. I feel that way about like the roles that sometimes we play in relationships, especially when we're young. They're dictated. We don't decide that this is how we want to engage sexually. Somebody says, oh, you're this or you're that, or you do this, or you look like this, or you dress like this, or you act like this. So that means that you're this. And you like,
I guess so.
Cause hell, what do I know? You know, what do I know? I guess that is the difference in terms when we talk about examples, is that as a young gay black boy, you really don't have anybody to talk to other than other young gay black boys that look just like you who don't really know shit. And like our parents always say, don't ask your friends about sex because they don't know any more than you. We didn't really have people to talk to about those things. And well, if we did, we didn't realize it, or we were too embarrassed to admit that that's what we were dealing with at the time.
That's very, very true.
And that probably would have saved us a lot of heartache in those early 20s because mine were shit. they were shit, you know? And I think my 20s period, like my entire 20s were not great. I credit a lot of my embracing of my sexuality and what I like and what I don't like and just that freedom to my 30s. It started
at 30 for me. So what was going on in 20s, though?
I was living a sexual experience that I didn't enjoy because somebody said that this is what you are, you know? And we joke about that. You know, we do a horrible job in our community about just being like, well, child, I guess you this. And that's kind of how it is. And even when you say you not and you don't like that, they're like, well, I guess you are. And so I spent a lot of my 20s in that space attracting not people good, that were not available, that were not good people, that were not good for me. You know, I mean, literally, I probably have friends in quotations like for 10 plus years, and like our relationship was purely like sexual relationship, and it wasn't this. Enjoyed the person, but I dreaded the experience to a certain extent, but I enjoyed being around the person. So I won't say I faked it, but I was like, well, I want to be around this person, and this is the only thing that we're going to be able to do. So I guess I'll just go with it, you know, and then eventually maybe it'll turn into something more valuable, and it never did. So you live and you learn. And so in my 30s, I was just like, fuck that shit. Sex is supposed to be enjoyable.
And this is what I enjoy. Yeah.
I should only be doing shit that makes me happy. Exactly. Changed my life. It changed my life. But I don't, you know, because we can't oftentimes have those conversations. It's tough. You know what I'm saying? And I really want to, that is one of the motivations for starting the podcast for me, because I remember what it was like being, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily an ideal podcast for young teenage boys in high school to be listening to, but I wanted something. I wanted to know that I wasn't this crazy outlier. And I think going to college and attending college where we did allowed me to understand that there were other black boys like me. You know what I'm saying? That actually cared about education, but also cared about having a good time. You know, that it wasn't unattractive or nerdy or unpopular to be smart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It was a special place, honestly. And when you talk about it, like, it takes me back. Like, yeah, I didn't think about it from that perspective. We were seen. You saw yourself in other people.
Yeah. And weren't ostracized because you were that way, because you were artsy or creative. And you go through your, I'm from Detroit, so Detroit is just rough all around. And so, you know, it's just, I didn't experience a lot of negativity per se, like, you know, nobody was like shooting up my house or, you know, robbing us or anything like that. But it was still very much so Detroit, and Detroit can be a very dangerous place. And there were definitely things in my immediate atmosphere that could have challenged my safety. But it didn't. And I'm grateful for that. But mm-hmm. college was totally different. You know what I'm saying? It was totally different. And it was just good to be around people who, you know, they didn't clown me because I enjoyed classical music. You know what I'm saying? And before, you only found those types of spaces in particular niches. Like, I had to be a part of a youth ensemble in order to, or a youth theater like Mosaic in order to get that type of feeling. You know what I'm saying? Or a particular program in high school in order to get that type of feeling. And so that was a dope experience. But again, that's a tangent. I just want to believe that black gay men can be in monogamous relationships and be happy and have families and have children and their picket fence if that's what they want, and take their husbands to homecoming with their kid in the stroller.
They're there every year. I don't know if you've paid attention lately, but they're there.
No, because I'm single, I'd be drunk or high. So
yeah.
I miss all of that. I think this has been great.
Listen,
John,
I've literally had the time of my life. This has been the most amazing experience. I hope you do edit most of it, but I had a really good time.
I'm going to edit a good portion of it, but to be quite honest, I think for me, this is what I enjoy about my podcast, which I've had to embrace now that we're at home, because when I was doing it before, it was totally different. I was like in my car, is that I like the whole aspect of it being kind of like live unedited radio, because I think that's cool. You know, things that come up on the fly and you're able to be really, really organic. I think we talked about things, obviously, this podcast totally went left, and so we didn't really necessarily talk about the one that got away. We just talked about life, and I think that that's cool. And I don't even know what I'm going to name this episode, but I'm really excited that we got a chance to do it, and it's dope that you decided to be on with me tonight. So I appreciate you, friend. Appreciate you. Well, people, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Popping Off with Phil. Continue to like, to share, to post, to rate. And we'll be back same time next Tuesday to laugh, cry, and talk some more shit. Peace.